This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not substitute for professional medical advice. Please seek a medical professional or healthcare provider if you're seeking any medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Thanks, everyone.
So, next one, how too much fructose can feed cancer tumors, written by Corey Pelk on December 11, 2024. So recent research from Washington University, St. Louis, indicates that high dietary intake of fructose, which is a sugar commonly found in fruits, vegetables, and honey, may promote tumor growth in certain cancers, though. And that includes melanoma, breast cancer, and cervical cancer. While naturally occurring, fructose in whole foods is generally harmless. Concerns arise with high fructose corn syrup, a sweetener prevalent in processed foods like sodas and packaged snacks. Excessive consumptions of the
formula,
which
blows my mind, but yes,
is another tangent on its own.
Yeah.
So excessive consumption of such sweeteners has been linked to various health issues, including Alzheimer's disease, type 2 diabetes, fatty liver disease, kidney disease, and cancer. In animal studies, researchers observed that liver converts fructose into lipids known as LPCs, which are associated with
inflammation.
If you see the word, it literally takes more than half of the sentence. I am not going to try to say that. LPCs.
Lysophosphatidylcholines. That's a long word. Okay,
takes more than half of the
lysophosphatidylcholines. LPCs, guys, LPCs.
Elevated LPCs levels can supply cancer cells with necessary materials to grow and divide, potentially accelerating tumor development. It's important to note that this research is in its early stages, primarily involving animal modules. Further studies are needed to determine if these findings directly apply to humans. Nonetheless, the study underscores the potential health risks of excessive fructose consumption, particularly from processed foods, high in added sugars is a problem. To mitigate these risks, health experts recommend moderating the intake of processed foods and sweetened beverages, opting instead to whole unprocessed foods. This approach not only reduces fructose consumption, but also supports overall health and well-being, which you did the whole food.
Like diet, challenge.
Yeah, the whole 30.
That's it. That was what it
that is. That was actually a really eye-opening. I've done keto. Mm-hmm. I've done whole 30. I've done low carb. I've done high protein. I haven't done the carnivore diet, but I've done Whole 30. And out of all the diets that I've done, Whole 30 was, yes, I think you naturally lose weight because there's a lot of things that you don't eat, and it's kind of just part of the process. But I think what Whole 30 really taught me was, oh my God, everything has something that should not be in there.
Exactly.
Like,
and everything has sugar for no good reason.
For no reason. And also,
bacon. Why does bacon have sugar?
Why does ketchup have sugar? Why does, you know, and yes, I'm not trying to say that sugar is like this villain or whatever, but in certain instances, it is actually.
Mostly here in the States, though.
Yeah.
Like, here in the States, it's a problem. Like, sugar's a problem.
I think you can use sugar in certain things.
100%,
but yeah. What opened my eyes about this is that when you look at it, Whole 30 taught me how to read nutrition labels. Mm-hmm. That's what it taught me. And I did not do that before. So it's extremely valuable. And it just taught me to just turn the box around or the can around or the bottle around and just read. Yeah. Read. What does it say? And if it had, it got to a point where if it had more, a list like of more than 6 or 7 ingredients, I put it back on the shelf.
Yeah.
Because I just taught myself that that's, why is that in there? That's not necessary. I don't need that. Yeah. So again, it's a very strict diet too. That's why it's only really meant to do for 30 days. It's supposed to be kind of a reset. Maybe if you're like struggling with allergies or something that's bothering you and you don't really know what it is. So a lot of individuals can use it as an elimination diet and then slowly reintroduce those types of foods back into the diet. However, the main thing that I took from that is, one, the way that I feel without alcohol is crazy. Two, I read nutrition labels.
Mm-hmm.
And three, sugar is in everything.
Everything.
So is soy.
Soy too. Yeah.
That was another one that I said, what? Why?
I don't understand that. Yeah. In the most innocuous things, it's like, why? Yeah. What is soy doing in here?
Yeah. And it did teach me how to eat more whole foods. Yeah. So I think that was a huge part of it. And again, I didn't feel restricted. I had bacon.
Yeah.
You know, I had all other things. I had potatoes. I had everything else. It just had to be whole.
Right.
Without any additives. And then, yes, no dairy, no legumes, no soy, no processed foods, no alcohol, no sugar. So, yes, it is really hard. And those first few days, you're struggling, right? Because everything in your house has that.
Everything.
Right? So, yeah, you kind of struggle. But after the first week or so, that's it. You kind of just start getting used to doing things. Mm-hmm. And it really, like, trains you on how to eat better.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, we could go on a whole big tangent on how bad, like,
popular diets.
Popular diets and how bad, like, our food is. I learned in Grenada about the reading of the labels.
Yes. Bread.
Yeah. Why is, like, an ingredient list for bread, like, this
mm-hmm.
long?
Mm-hmm.
I know how to do bread. I do bread from scratch. I need, like, maybe 3 to 4 ingredients.
Period.
Like, there's nothing else that needs to go into bread.
Yeah. It has this for stabilization. It has that for this and that.
When I actually started doing bread, and then I lived in Grenada, and I had a friend that she was pretty granola, but, like, whatever. She taught me a lot of things like this. She's like, I don't buy bread that has more than, I don't remember what she said. Like, I think it was like 4 or 5 ingredients. Yeah. And I'm like, you're right.
Yeah.
Now knowing how to do bread, I'm like, there is no need.
Yeah.
There isn't. Yeah.
All right. So too much screen time harms preschoolers' sleep behavior. Newsflash. This is literally my conversation every single day.
Well, we did a whole last episode on it, yes, so check that out.
Exactly. So this is by Health Day on December 12, 2024. So excessive screen time can negatively impact preschoolers' sleep and behavior. A recent study found that increased screen exposure is linked to sleep disruptions, which may lead to attention difficulties, hyperactivity, and mood swings in young children and adolescents. The study didn't specifically say adolescents. I'm just saying by experience. The study published in the Journal of Early Child Development and Care highlights a concerning cycle. More screen time leads to poor sleep, which in turn exacerbates behavioral issues. This cycle can be challenging for both children and their caregivers.
Of course.
Right. For me, my daughter is a different child when she's on the screen. She's, I don't know, just so crazy.
Mostly at that age, yeah. I did see that with Amora at that age.
Oh, God.
Like, now it's a little easier, but at that age, it's very, very impactful. Yeah.
And then to promote better sleep and behavior in preschoolers, experts recommend limiting screen time, especially before bedtime, encouraging alternative activities such as reading, outdoor play, and interactive family time that can also support healthier development.
Yeah.
So this screen time has obviously exploded. The world of the internet has exploded. The world of YouTube has exploded.
Big time, yeah.
And yeah, I'm not saying that if you're trying, again, we're realistic here. You and I are both moms.
Yep.
Our kids have screen time.
Oh, okay? Yeah.
I'm not saying that if I'm trying to make dinner for 20 to 30 minutes that my daughter is not watching some Disney princess movies.
Yeah.
So it's just,
if you're in a long drive, something's gonna
exactly. Give. Something, you know, I'm hoping that she'll just sleep, but at the end of the day, but you know what? Here's the thing. So I've been, like, on a mission to cut down on screen time.
Okay.
Right? Just because there has been a lot of new data coming out, which the reason why it's coming out now, it's not because it didn't exist before. It's just that we finally have that longevity of time to actually do these studies and actually get some really good data.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And there is data pretty much solidifying that connection that everyone has always been wondering.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I've been on a mission to cut it down.
Okay.
Right? And so much so, before she used to only eat with the screen on, right? Now she doesn't.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So now here and there she'll ask for it, but we try to distract her with something else.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong, there's still some days where I lose that battle.
Of course.
But it's significantly reduced. Tell me why she doesn't have a tablet.
Okay.
I haven't given her a tablet. That's just a personal decision that I did. And however, I brought the iPad on the airplane since we were going on our trip.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, this is like a different situation. Yeah. We're on an airplane.
You're going to
want her to be distracted. Exactly. I don't want to piss anyone else around me. And can you believe that this girl did not care for the screen?
Nice.
And I think it's because of so much limitation that she was interested in doing other things, coloring. So I bought her one of those magic, like the Crayola ones that they only draw on the paper and not anywhere else.
Amar loves those, yeah.
Tell me why she was busy for a full 2 hours on that.
Love it.
Love it. That's amazing.
So at the end of the day, there is a lot of data now showing the negative side of screen time that we all suspected and we're all seeing now that it's true.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, and especially this article is saying before sleep, I cannot stress the importance of saying no screen time. And everyone's kind of just like, what? Like if I have three heads and it's like, no TV. It's and they're like, oh, but my husband wants to come home and watch TV. That's a family decision that y'all are going to have to make.
Yeah. I mean, that's me. I fall asleep with the screen on. Yeah. With the, at least the phone.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'm very guilty of that.
I was like, just do it for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
You will see that your child will go to sleep earlier and y'all will have your own personal time to watch some TV.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, but it is. It's like a family decision that they have to come to. And it's like it's a dedicated step.
Yeah. You have to, and it takes a bit to get used to it too, which is the hard part as well, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, all right, so next one. FDA recalls more than 233,000 bottles of antidepressant over possible cancerous chemical in the bottle.
Yeah. Okay.
Not even the friggin' medication. But anyways, by Anthony Robledo.
Robledo.
There you go. And Taylor Ardrey on USA Today, December 13, 2024. The FDA has issued a Class 2 recall for
duloxetine.
Delayed release capsules produced by Rising Pharma Inc. due to the presence of
N-nitroso-duloxetine
impurity above reduced limits, which is potentially carcinogenic. Over 550,000 bottles of antidepressant used to treat depression, anxiety, fibromyalgia, and nerve pain were concerned. Class 2 recalls indicate that the use of the product may cause temporary or reversible health issues with a low risk of severe health consequences. Patients currently taking
duloxetine
should not abruptly stop their medication, as this can lead to withdrawal symptoms such as irritability, nausea, dizziness, vomiting, nightmares, headaches, and even suicidal ideation. It's crucial to consult a healthcare provider to discuss alternative treatments or to establish a safe plan for tapering off the medication if necessary.
Yeah.
So just don't like, oh my God, I have it, like stop. No.
Yeah, exactly. Go talk to your provider. Again, this is the extended release duloxetine. When this came out, I kind of felt a little bit, that kind of sucks because duloxetine is really used for a lot of different medical indications.
Yeah, it's fibromyalgia and everything.
Yeah, for pain. Yeah. I mean, it is an adjunct medication that really helps a lot of people.
Yeah.
And again, this is the extended release. I haven't seen any information on the regular tab.
Yeah.
But again, if you are taking the extended release, it's just good to maybe talk to your pharmacist. Okay. They would probably have a pretty good amount of information of if that one is part of that recall. And then also your physician to see if there is any other alternatives.
Right.
But hopefully they get that fixed because duloxetine has been around for quite a while.
It's not even the medication, it's the bottle.
Yeah. So
anyway, back to plastics.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so next up, eat less meat, more beans and lentils for protein, new USDA guidelines say. All right, so this is by Health Day, December 13th, 2024 is when it was published. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has released new dietary guidelines recommending that Americans reduce their consumption of red meat and processed meats and increase their intake of plant-based proteins, such as beans, peas, and lentils. These protein-rich legumes offer numerous health benefits, including lowering blood pressure and reducing the risk of cardiovascular disease. Now, the guidelines also advise limiting added sugars, sodium, saturated fats, while promoting a diet rich in veggies, fruits, whole grains, nuts, and fish. Notably, the advisory panel did not provide specific guidance on ultra-processed foods or update the recommendations on alcohol consumption, so citing the insufficient evidence and pending external reports. Okay, so these recommendations aim to address the prevalence of diet-related chronic health conditions in the U.S., encouraging a shift towards more plant-based eating patterns for improved health outcomes. So yeah, I mean, does it really surprise us? Jules and I have been doing a lot. I mean, I feel like part of every recap.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we have episodes, the carnivore versus...
Yes, omnivore.
Omnivore diet. Check that episode out. There was like a great amount of information.
Yeah.
And it does show that the omnivore diet...
Yeah.
Is superior official. So
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying not to eat animal protein. That's but not what we're
omnivore
saying.
Is that you yes. have it in
exactly,
but it's not just like the carnivore diet that it's only that.
Only that exactly. So you know, a lot of new research coming out. I think there's a lot of new. I think social media as well,
big time,
has released this like plethora of information.
Well, it's where put a spotlight on these
exactly.
things.
Exactly, it puts spotlights on things that maybe weren't really, maybe were just brushed off before for whatever reason.
Yeah,
and for whatever. Now I'm happy because these are new guidelines that I can also tell my patients, say no, like the USDA has now yeah. provided new recommendations. Yeah. You really should be eating more plant-based things, and again. As simple as no meat Mondays.
Exactly.
On yeah. Mondays, you stick to no animal protein.
Exactly. Yeah, it could be done. I mean, yeah. It's just one day.
It's one day. But you're including that.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of people that start off that way.
And then they,
and
yeah.
stay. There's people that do, I'm just saying the vegan diet, okay? But there's a lot of people that try a vegan diet and stay.
Yep.
My trainer...
Or make it more like prevalent, like
yes,
you
or
know.
More involved in their every day to day lives. But I used to have a trainer that he used to be totally vegan. His son was not. He didn't want to
right.
have that diet for his son.
Okay,
but he said that in the future,
yeah,
maybe his son will also be vegan. So at the end of the day, I don't think that there's anything wrong with these certain types of diets. I feel like during residency,
yeah,
I feel like every older pediatrician like shat on a vegan.
Big time. And
I think it was just like a lack of information because sometimes I feel, you know, sometimes I'm in that position. Mm-hmm. Someone gives me some new information. I'm like, that's not what I learned or something. You kind of feel uneasy about it. So, yeah.
It's a generational thing. Because I feel like us.
But this is medicine. This is medicine. Medicine evolves.
It does.
Research comes out.
It does.
New things happen.
You're always learning.
Yeah. And I'm not here trying to promote certain diets. Mm-hmm. You need to do whatever works for you and what is healthy for your body.
Right.
So as long as you are getting the recommended nutrients, then yes. And remember, some things are absorbed better by other things.
Yeah.
So just because you're substituting doesn't mean that your body is also going to process that the same way. But yeah, lots of information. We can literally go on a whole entire tangent, which we have been. This episode has been like crazy tangents.
We're probably going to have to split this one in two.
And that's okay.
Exactly. Anyway, so because this is like a lot of good information. Again, it was two recaps that we missed.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. Anyway, so next one, which is pretty big, at least here in the U.S., this was like a big shocker for us. So obesity dipped. In the U.S. adults last year, so 2024, for the first time in more than a decade, guys.
Whoa! We did it, America! America!
That's something to be proud of.
Yeah, I know, seriously. I guess.
And it was, you guessed it, because of medications and new medications that have come out.
Yeah.
I know this is going to be a little bit of a touchy subject because a lot of people are
But let's just, let's not be judgy, okay? Let's look at the overall win. Okay?
Exactly. Let's just, you know, all right. So this is by Denise Chow and Akshay Sayal, MD, on December 13th, 2024. So for the first time in over a decade, obesity rates among U.S. adults have declined. A recent study published in the JAMA Health Forum reports a decrease from 46% in 2022 to 45.6% in 2023. I'm sorry, it was in 2024, it was 2023, the dip. This reduction is partly attributed to the increased use of GLP-1 receptor agonists such as Ozempic and Wegovy, which have seen a 700% rise in prescriptions from 2019 to 2023. So if you are one of those really, really lucky individuals that bought stock in 2018 or 2019,
yeah,
you are doing great.
Good for you.
You are doing wonderful in life and you make great decisions. Anyway, so the most significant decreases were observed among women across multiple age groups and adults aged 66 to 75, particularly in the South, where the use of these drugs is highest.
Interesting, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so despite this positive development, experts caution that the trend may not be sustained. Obesity remains a critical public health issue, with nearly 60% of U.S. adults with obesity having high blood pressure and approximately 23% having diabetes as well.
Yeah.
So at least it's a good trend, okay? Yes. The trend of lowering obesity.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, that's a good thing for the individual people that are obese. That means less comorbidities, less deaths associated with obesity.
The pushback that I get from this, at least from like social media, because like I do post these things on like our stories and whatnot, and then I do get like pushbacks from it, like saying, hey, but like it's you're treating it with a medication instead of like healthy diet, healthy exercise. And I'm like,
that's true.
It's true.
However, there are people that do eat a healthier diet.
And they can.
And with the medication, right?
Exactly.
Again, we're not trying to say that
this is it.
This is the most natural thing. No, I think everyone is fully aware that the reason why we've had this downtrend is because of these medications. But again, a lot of these medications has really pushed people to eat healthier, to live a healthier lifestyle, to maintain that weight to be, you know, to come off. So, yeah, no, I totally agree. Not everything is, there are a lot of people that use it to just, I need to shed a couple of like pounds and I need to starve myself, so I'm going to inject myself. No, this is not the reason why you should be doing it. Yes, okay, everyone is on the same page about that.
Yeah.
But
we're talking about like morbidly obese people with a lot of comorbidities, and this is a stepping stone. This is not like, you know, it's a good stepping stone to get that reduced and then to learn how to like properly eat, because these medications will stop you. Like you will not be able to eat as much as you were, so you're learning at the same time. This is just, I don't know, there's a lot of different ways to view it. It's just a good trend, at least.
Yes,
a good downward trend.
Exactly. All right, so next up, AI powered blood tests first to spot earliest signs of breast cancer. This is by the University of Edinburgh on December 13th, 2024. Researchers at the University of Edinburgh have developed an innovative non-invasive blood test that utilizes artificial intelligence to detect breast cancer at the earliest stage, known as stage 1A.
We're living in the future, guys.
Yeah, we are. This is a groundbreaking method that combines laser-based Raman spectroscopy with machine learning algorithms to identify subtle biochemical changes in the blood plasma that occurred during the initial phase of breast cancer. In a pilot study, so pilot just means in one of those first studies out there, in a pilot study involving 12 breast cancer patients and 12 healthy controls, the test demonstrated a 98% accuracy rate in detecting early stage breast cancer. Additionally, it accurately distinguished between the four main subtypes of breast cancer with over 90% accuracy, potentially enabling more personalized treatment approaches. Now, traditionally, breast cancer detection methods such as a physical exam, the mammogram, and biopsies often identify the disease at a later stage, right? Because it's hard to catch something really early on.
Especially that early.
Now, early detection is crucial for improving treatment outcomes and survival rates. This AI-powered blood test offers a promising alternative by identifying the cancer at a much earlier stage, thereby enhancing the chance of a successful treatment and beating cancer. The research team aims to expand their study to include a larger participant pool and really explore the test's applicability and to other cancer types, not just breast cancer. Their ultimate goal is to develop a comprehensive screening tool capable of detecting multiple forms of cancer in their earliest stages, and this significantly will be basically improving early diagnosis and patient outcomes. Wow.
Isn't this amazing? When I saw this, I'm I have to include this. Like, it's just like amazing.
It's just, I saw a comment the other day saying AI is like the air fryer of medicine. That people are like, it does that too?
That is so accurate.
It's so accurate.
I love that analogy.
I know.
So cool.
When I saw it, I started laughing so hard. Yeah, it's that AI is the air fryer of medicine.
My mind is blown because that is exactly it. That's exactly it.
The internet is unbeatable.
It really is. It's sometimes a wonderful place and sometimes it's a pit of hell, but still, it, like, that's a great moment right there. That is so true.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Anyway, so this drug is a quote-unquote breakthrough of the year, and it could mean the end of the HIV epidemic. So this was on December 12, 2024. Lenacapavir, a new HIV medication developed by Gilead Sciences, has shown remarkable promise in both treatment and prevention of HIV infections. As a capsid inhibitor, it disrupts the virus's protective shell, effectively halting its replication. Administered via subcutaneous injection, so under the skin, every 6 months, lenacapavir offers a convenient alternative to daily oral medications, which is typically the norm right now, or the gold standard. I think that's the
gold standard.
In clinical trials, lenacapavir demonstrated 100% efficacy in preventing HIV among cisgender women, with no infections reported among participants receiving the drug. Similarly, studies involving men and gender diverse individuals who have sex with men showed a 96% reduction in HIV infections, highlighting its broad protective potential. Beyond prevention, lenacapavir has been approved for treating multi-drug resistant HIV in adults, providing a new option for those with limited treatment options. The U.S. Drug Administration, the FDA, approved lenacapavir in December 2022, marketing it as the first capsid inhibitor available for HIV treatment. Efforts are underway to make lenacapavir accessible globally. Gilead has reached agreements with generic manufacturers to produce the drug for more than 120 low to middle income countries, aiming for availability in the late 2025 or early 2026. This initiative seeks to provide the medication to at least 2 million people over 3 years, addressing disparities in HIV prevention and treatment access.
Nice.
Amazing.
I know.
I feel like this is our generation's the antibiotic penicillin.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just, it's amazing. It's amazing. I loved it, that the fact that they're even working with generic companies to like make it that much more accessible. You know, it's not a greed thing at this point. It's more like, let's get it out there.
I know. And the world of HIV is such a complicated, big world.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I always feel like any advancement in HIV is just that much better.
Yeah. It's been around for so long. We need to get rid of it already. Like, come on. You know,
pesky little guy.
It is. Yeah. It's a very, very smart virus.
Yep.
Anyway, that's you.
All right. So FDA approved.
I literally just included this morning.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. This is fresh off the press on December 21st.
And we're going to have to make an updated video on.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
FDA approves weight loss drug Zepbound for sleep apnea. Just another one for the books for Zepbound.
Can we just appreciate how like luxurious she looks right now? Like, do it again. That. No, I'm joking.
This is Julie's, by the way. She let me borrow it.
Oh, check out our behind the scenes.
Yeah. Girlfriend.
I told you this was a New Year's.
You just told me it was the episode. You did not tell me that there was an attire. I open the door and I'm in flannel. Okay. Flannel with my hair off to the side, down, minimal makeup, nothing crazy. Julie opens the door. She's like in this like lacy, furry hair curled, dark maroon lips, eyeliner on fleek. And I'm just like,
that's what.
Where are we going?
And the way that I opened up the door too, I was like,
yeah, she opened up the door and I was just like, I literally turned around. I'm like, what?
I like scared her.
Yeah.
You were scared there for a moment. You're like, what's happening?
All I said was the stark difference between us right now.
Well, even Mario walked into the room and can see you today. And he's like, what is happening?
Yeah. Exactly. So check out our behind the scenes. Thank you, Julie, for letting me borrow this getup.
It suits you so well.
I match you way better now. I don't look like I don't even know. I looked like I was going to a soccer game or something. But anyways, all right. So this article is by Berkeley Lovelace Jr., December 20th, 2024. And this was on NBC News. The U.S. Food Drug Administration. So the FDA has approved Eli Lilly's medication Zepbound, which is also known as tirzepatide, as the first prescription drug for treating moderate to severe obstructive sleep apnea in adults with obesity. Obstructive sleep apnea is a condition characterized by repeated interruptions in breathing during sleep, leading to symptoms such as snoring, fatigue, and excessive daytime sleepiness. So traditionally, it has been managed with medical devices such as CPAP, which everyone hates. Now, CPAP has also, it's also progressed too. It's not as crazy as it was before.
I mean, my mom just got she's getting a new CPAP now, and it's like wireless.
Yeah, exactly. The world of CPAP has actually changed a lot.
Mind-blowing. I was like, what the f-?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Much more travel-friendly too.
Yeah.
Now, in clinical trials, nearly half of the participants with moderate to severe OSA, so obstructive sleep apnea, experienced significant improvements while taking Zepbound. Obviously, you lose the weight. You lose a lot of that.
It's mechanical.
Yes, exactly. A lot of that mechanical portion of OSA.
Because think about it, guys, and correct me if I'm wrong. It's like you have all this fat, like here, chronically, mechanically. This is not like an internal, physical, like obstruction of your throat. Okay. So you're breathing as you're laying down, sleeping.
Yeah.
So
it's the weight, the gravity, everything. Yeah,
exactly.
Now, Zepbound is a GLP-1 receptor agonist, like we've discussed many, many times before. Now, initially developed for type 2 diabetes and weight management, its effectiveness in treating sleep apnea is attributed to the weight loss. So that reduces excess fat tissue that can be obstructing the airways during your sleep. Now, this approval positions Eli Lilly ahead in a competitive market for anti-obesity medications, which analysts predict could exceed $100 billion in annual sales by 2030.
What the fuck was I doing in 2018? Comiendo mierda is what I was doing.
Yep.
Like, I should have...
We should have invested in Eli Lilly. All right, well, cheers, Eli Lilly. You definitely take
you the are the winner. Yeah, you are the winner. You are the winner of 2024. Eli Lilly wins 2024.
Oh my God, we should do that next year.
Yes.
We should have like an award ceremony for like best of this, best of that.
Something healthcare related best one.
Yes.
This year, 2024, well, past year, 2024, the clear winner, Eli Lilly.
And we should even get like our target audience to like vote.
Yes.
For everything.
Yes.
Well, that'd be really cool, Jules.
Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, we'll do that for sure. Anyway.
All right, guys.
So thank you guys for tuning in. This ended up being a two-parter because, I mean,
it was a little longer than usual, but we haven't done an episode on, you know, like the recaps news and all of that in a really long time. So we hope you enjoyed it. We love bees.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We loved opening up the new year with this episode.
Absolutely. And it just like brings into light a lot of the things that I talk with you guys on almost a daily basis, like through threads and all these other forms of social media. Like when I post on IG, like on the stories, like this is new or a recall or this and that, you guys like respond a lot. So then this is kind of like putting a nice bow on all of that, you know? So thank you guys for always being so awesome on our socials too. Mm-hmm. Like you guys are amazing. And we love doing this. We're going to continue doing this with you guys with your support. Thank you all again, because this is again the New Year's one. Thank you all again for making last year such a freaking awesome year.
Yeah.
You know, on everything, on like just listening or just viewing, whatever, everything. You guys are, and of course in all our socials, you guys are amazing. So thank you guys again. And we'll see you in the next one. Check us out again on all forms of social media, on all the things. Keep doing everything that you guys are doing. Check out our merch.
Yes.
And stay tuned for more merch
in
this new year. And we'll see you on the next one.
Happy New Year. Bye.
Oh, wait. Like, comment, review us on all streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, etc.
Check us out on Instagram and TikTok at Funny Medicine Podcast. Our Gmail is funnymedicine305@gmail.com. And remember, we are not diagnosing you.
Definitely not. Just funny stuff.
See you later, guys.